I on? Can everybody hear me? Okay, great. Good morning. Let me start by saying I don't take it lightly to stand up here and speak before you. I consider it a privilege. And my prayer has been that the words would be God's, not mine. And so if I mess up, take it up with him. No. I truly mean that. My prayer has been that that the Lord would speak and that I would
very good.
So I hope that this message meets some of you where
you're
at.
Go ahead and sermon
side now. And that you can use it to grow. So
did you start the recorder?
The past few days, obviously as it's been leading up to Father's Day, I've been listening to the radio, I drive to work, and one of the conversations on the radio, it was interesting, was top five fathers from television. And some of these names that came up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that guy, you know, and oh my gosh, I forgot about that guy. I mean, they were bringing up Archie Bunker, and I'm like, oh man, he got in the top five, and, you know, they brought up Mr. Drummond. You know, these are names from, you know, remember he said the 90s, these are like the 80s, so this goes way back. But I have said for over a decade, right, probably 15 years, I started talking about how fathers on television have gone from like Ward Cleaver to like Homer Simpson, right? And trust me, I fall in the Homer Simpson category. I like donuts a lot. But I feel like this is not to say anything against mothers by any means, but over the years, mothers give great advice on television now, and fathers end up hanging in the blinds behind them, like, you know, like, we don't know anything anymore. And I think part of that is we've allowed that to happen over the years. Kids, I'm sorry. You can go out for your stuff today. I apologize. That was my fault. I missed that. So I feel like we've kind of done that to ourselves a little bit over the years. But then I listened to this comedian, and he brought up the top, like, 20 holidays. There's Christmas number one, Mother's Day number two. So it goes Jesus, then moms. I can't argue with that, right? I can't. But then guess where Father's Day falls? Any number? Top 20. 20. Father's Day falls at 20 in this list, right? It falls behind Arbor Day. I have two master's degrees, and I swear to you, I had no idea what Arbor Day was. I had to look it up. Celebration of trees, I believe, right? If I read it correctly. Sorry if I offended anybody that celebrates Arbor Day. God bless you. But we fall behind Celebrate Trees Day. Like, then we fall also behind Halloween. Ghouls and goblins take it before us, right? Think about that. So my goal today is to give you guys some characteristics, some tools. Maybe bump us above Arbor Day, all right? That's my goal. Maybe not Halloween yet. That would take maybe a whole series of talks, but I'm going to get us above Arbor Day. At least that's what I'm going to try, all right? So the past few years, we focused on, you know, this pandemic. Today, what I'd like us to focus in on is an epidemic, right? That, in my opinion, is destroying our society, our cultures, our classrooms, our churches, and I believe it's an epidemic of fatherlessness. I truly believe that. I believe that the majority of our problems in our world today, especially American culture, is lack of fatherhood. It's lack of fathers, and it's lack of, hear this, father figures. Not all men have children, and that's fine. I have a friend, he is my brother, and he is the greatest father figure I've ever seen to my boys. He's not here today. I love him to death. We call him Uncle Gary. And the things he shows my kids, I don't know that I could ever show them. So please hear me, guys, that you don't have kids yet, or you've never had them. You have an immense impact on children around you. Be a father figure. So please don't tune me out. Listen. On this Father's Day, please allow me to be cliche and bring a message on fatherhood, right? I could have talked on anything, but I feel like this is very important. Ladies, also, I speak to you. Don't tune me out. We have roles in this world that I believe that the Lord has set up for us. And that when we men meet our roles and you women meet your roles, we meet the needs of a dying generation, right? We meet the needs of a generation that is, they're absolutely dying for structure and love. both of which can be found where? In God's plan and in God. And if we meet those roles, men and women, in these kids' lives, we're going to see amazing things in this world. I truly believe that. So, you see, the world's rejected all things of God, even down to what? Basic laws, man and woman. Right? We get down to that, and I'm not going to get into that kind of stuff today, but I just want you to see that. I had a conversation with some people at a wedding last night. They said, my kids are talking, 5 years old. My son is talking to me about furries in his school. I don't even know how to explain that to him, is what she said to me. And I said, you shouldn't have to explain that to him. He shouldn't, at a 5 years old, you shouldn't have to worry about that. Guys, we got a heck of a job ahead of us. At 5 years old, these kids don't even know who to look to get these, their world explained to them. That's our job. Women, please know you're intricate. There's truths in here for you today, so please, we're raising the men and women of the future. And so let's do this together. Men, I'm telling you today, though, that you're needed in this world. And we can't fail at the task that's set before us. It's literally a matter of life and death. I was listening to a pastor, and he said, you can take classes on women's studies, but you can't really find a class on men's studies, on training men. I didn't believe him. I said, all these colleges, all these things. So I went, I did a little research. I spent about 20 minutes. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't an exhaustive search. But it took me about 20 minutes, and I finally found this master's degree, and I want to read it so I get it right. Master's degree in women, men's, and gender studies. I said, I found it. There's something. Here's the classes. Feminist theory, women's history, and gender and politics. Again, all good classes, I'm sure, but no classes that say, men, here's what your job is. Here's how to be a man. Here's what to do. Not that I necessarily want a secular university out there teaching my boys how to be men. That's my job. But you'd think there'd be one class or two, right? Hey, these are some good tools. I believe that it's our job to train our men to be and to understand their greatest value to this society, this culture. And I believe that's being a father and a father figure. If you don't agree with me, I'll go out to coffee with you and we can talk about it all day. I would love it. When I say we're in an epidemic, which is literally a battle for life and death, I don't believe I am overstating it. So, happy Father's Day. There's the cliche message that I'm going to give. I'm going to give you some tools today that I believe are characteristics of God that he's wanting to put into men. Again, cliche, our toolboxes. My wife is probably laughing. If I go near a toolbox, it ends up with me hurt and losing fingers and something that's broke in our home. But this toolbox I'm okay with. And so I want to give you these tools to throw in there. And I believe they come from the greatest love letter ever written to us, from the greatest life manual ever written to us, quite frankly, the greatest book ever written. And obviously, you know the punchline, the tagline here, it's the Bible. Again, that's not cliche. It is when people say, get this self-help book, get this, I'm always scratching my head like it's been written for years. You don't need to go to that book or that book or that speaker or that pastor or it's right there. It's in every hotel room. It's in every library. There's 4 million different ways to read it. You can find people that know what they're talking about that are smarter than you that can help you read through it with you. That's where you go. And that's where I'm going today because the Father in heaven gave us this amazing blueprint. So I'd like to outline some of these tools and understand this is not all-encompassing. Obviously, it's not exhaustive. I could probably teach a college class on it. I could probably write several thousand books on it. I'm sure people have tried. But I'm going to focus in on four tools today. All right. And I'm going to start with this right before I get into them. Please, I've heard this said before, and it does speak to my heart. Let us never forget that God entrusts these children to us for just a little time. Right. We only have our children for a little time in this world. And then they go out. And so we should never take that responsibility lightly. It is my biggest responsibility. My job should come second. My life should come second to that responsibility. So he only gives us these children for a little while. So the four that I'm going to discuss today, humbleness, obedience, being steadfast, and sacrificial. Four. And I'll try not to be too long, I promise. All right, I'll get through them. Let's start with being humble. I'm not sure so many young people could even define humbleness nowadays. Our culture tells us, be number one. Shoot for number one. You're the best. Since the time you're a little kid, everybody gets a trophy. If you don't, the person who didn't give you the trophy is wrong, because everybody's super. Look out for you. Forget about them. That's not humbleness, right? Where has it even gotten us living that life, right? Suicide rates are high. People are depressed, right? The world's not a great place out there, in here sometimes, right? Let's be honest. So to be humble is to understand that we are not all that, as the kids used to say back in the 90s. We're not all that, all right? We, no matter what our title is, no matter what our position is, even if it's a title of high authority and you know, regalia, that people look at you and go, he's here, look. You are nothing compared to God. You are nothing compared to God. And being humble is saying this: I will put myself below you, and I will allow you to be lifted up. Sometimes it requires us, when we do that, to put ourselves below others and allow their needs to be lifted up. That happens a lot when you're willing to be humble before God. A lot of times he says, go and do this, go and do that. And you say, really? Really? Is that what I'm supposed to do? Okay. And we do it, hopefully. Okay, but Father, when we are humble, it is to push others. It allows others to be pushed towards, in my opinion, these engagements with Christ. They might miss those engagements if we are not willing to put ourselves lower than him and them. So while we humble ourselves, we're not saying our will, but his. So let's look at Jairus some might pronounce it, in Mark 5, starting in verse 21. You don't have to go there if you'd like to. That's it, Mark 5, starting in verse 21. So, I'll start. Jesus went back across to the other side of the lake, and there at the lakeside, large crowd gathered around him. Jairus, an official of the local synagogue, arrived. And when he saw Jesus, he threw himself down at his feet, and he begged him earnestly, my little daughter is very sick. Please come, place your hands on her, that she will get well and live. So Jesus started off with him, and many people were going along with Jesus, that they crowded around him on all sides. I always love whenever we tell stories, and I'm sure others have said this, it's nothing, you know, of deep spiritual truth, but whatever Jesus was, guess where there was? Crowd. There's always people around this guy. And Jairus, I went a little deeper. It just says that he was in the local synagogue. He was a leader. He wasn't just in the local synagogue. Some things that I read put him as the leader of the local synagogue. For him to decide that he would be willing to go and throw himself at another man's feet in that culture, It wouldn't happen. He, in essence, was where? At his wit's end. He knew it was where? Outside of him at this point. I have no control. I cannot control the situation. I don't care about my title. I don't care about my station in this community. That man has the answers. I'm going to him. I've heard about him. I've watched him. And I'm willing to do what? Throw myself at his feet. His daughter's dying. He's out of answers. He doesn't care about his position. He humbles himself. Again, he cared little for what people thought. James 4:10 tells us, humble thyself in the sight of the Lord, and what's going to happen? He will lift you up. Humble thyself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Let's see what happens. Imagine if more men, more fathers, think about that, would be willing to humble themselves in God's sight. Where might we be if more fathers said, not my will, but yours? More fathers willing to acknowledge that they don't have all the answers, and that they were willing to seek God for those answers on how to live and how to lead their families and others around them. Where would we be? A lot of people complain about our local officials. A lot of people complain about our president, our vice president. It doesn't matter which political bent you're on. 50% of the world hates you, 50% of the world likes it, whatever. But where would we be if those people were willing to do what? Humble themselves, look up to the Lord, lift him up, put his means before theirs, put his power before theirs, and say, what are we supposed to do? Help us lead. fathers for us. What are we supposed to do? How do I make these decisions? So Jairus, then he has to wait a little while. I'm sure others have heard the second part of this story. As they're walking and this large crowd is around him, what happens? The woman in the crowd who's been bleeding for 12, 13, you hear it all different. The most I've ever heard is 12, though usually she's been bleeding for many years. She's in this crowd and she fights her way through and she just has to do what? Touch his cloak, touch his robe. And she's immediately healed, right? And now think, Jesus is on his way to a dying girl. Jairus has already basically lost his station in this culture. He's already thrown it off. Jesus stops. He says, touch, wait, hold up. Can you see Jairus at this point? Hey, we were on our way, right? It doesn't say that, but I think we all put ourselves there and go, I might be a little bit more bolder than that. Jesus takes the time to do what? Look around, ask questions. Someone touch me. No, I need it, because there's going to be this interaction. Even Jesus' disciples start getting a little bit, hey, yo, there's a crowd, God, Jesus, look around. Are you serious? We got to pick out who touched you? They're the ones that start getting a little hyper, a little impatient. But Jairus, being humble, understanding the situation, he allows what's going on to happen. I'm sure he's inside, his daughter's dying, his baby, but he allows this to percolate, to see, you know, what's going on. And because he's willing to humble himself, he's willing to put God's plan in practice and not get in the way of it, this community is privileged to two miracles this day, not one. Two miracles in one. Isn't that amazing? Because he's willing to say, not my will, yours. Jesus meets with the woman. Eventually, she's healed. And then Jairus gets the news from his servant. Leave the guy alone. Leave Jesus alone. Your daughter's dead. What would you have done if you're Jairus? I did what I was supposed to do. I threw myself down on the ground. My world is over in this town. You just helped some woman that I'm more important than. In that culture, first of all, she was bleeding for 12 years. Dirty. Second of all, she's a woman. Can you imagine his mind right now? My little girl's dead because of her? He doesn't say that. Jesus doesn't even give him the opportunity, which I love. He goes, nope, she's just sleeping. Come on, let's go. What's Jairus thinking at this point? I don't know. I couldn't even imagine what he's thinking. But imagine if we were willing to humble ourselves and allow God's plan to work in his fullness of time, not ours. He's already seen beginning, end, in the middle. We see here. Imagine if we're willing to say, not my time, yours. It will work. I know it will. Our communities need miracles. How many of them, right? How many of our children need miracles? Let me tell you something. I'm a 16-year veteran of teaching, and I did social work in North Philly before that with children. My wife is a 20-year veteran of teaching. Our communities, our children need miracles. They need them. I don't say that because I'm standing on a church stage. I say that in work every day when people are complaining about the F that the kid got. The kid hasn't eaten in 7 weeks. How about we focus on that need? How about we realize that miracle is needed? Right? People wonder how I get these kids, people wonder how I get these kids who don't do work in other classes and who are problems in other classes. In my class, they're never a problem. People wonder why people are put into my wife's class because, and this isn't, but she gets some of the hardest, I love you. She gets some of the hardest people and situations I've ever heard of in teaching because she loves kids first for Jesus. Forget about teaching them how to read. They're going to learn that because she's great at that too. But these kids that are, they're tormented. They're banging their heads against walls. They're throwing stuff because they don't know what's going on inside of them. They don't have a plan. They have nobody showing it to them. Most of their homes have no fathers. They have no father figures, but they need someone to come alongside of them and love them. Be humble and let God's plan work. Can I give you a couple of statistics as I move on? Just so that we get kind of a glimpse. I'll go quickly. 63% of youth suicides are often from fatherless homes. U.S. Department of Health and Census. Think about that. 85% of all children who show behavior disorders come from fatherless homes. Center for Disease and Control. 70% of youth in state-operated institutions come from fatherless homes. That's the U.S. Department of Justice. And just from Fulton County, Georgia, and Texas Corrections, 85% of all youths in their prison come from fatherless homes. Where would we be if we would be willing to humble ourselves and love these kids for God's will, not ours? I'm telling you right now, we'll see miracles, man, if we're willing to do it. Second characteristic I'd like to discuss is being obedient. Once you humble yourself, you need to follow that up with obedience. That is a word most men do not like. Most people do not like being obedient. I know when I was a little kid, I hated it. My mom would say, do it, and I'd still not do it. And then she'd say, wait till your father gets home, and I would go, oh no. My father was handicapped, is handicapped, and when he could walk, it was with a brace, and you would hear him limping, click, 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 click. And I knew I should have just freaking listened. Because now I'm gonna get it. And he would walk in the room and he would go, it was like an old Western, get on the bed. No. The stare down the path. Bed. Okay. Because I knew if I didn't, he'd get me in his time and it would be ugly. So I knew my father wanted my obedience. He would say, I speak, you listen. Wouldn't that be amazing if we did that with God, guys? I speak, you listen. No argument, no back and forth. Do it. So let's look at this. And my goodness, it is very hard to be obedient. Let's look at Genesis 22:1. Again, you don't necessarily have to go there. I'll read it for you. But if Genesis 22:1, if you'd like to write that down and go back to it. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham, here I am, he replied. I love and I hate that beginning verse. God tests Abraham, the teacher. I understand the concept of tests. I was told before by a kid, I'm just not a good test taker. I said, so you're not good at the part where you tell me what you know and show me that you can do it. Got it. So we're kind of at an impasse, right? I'll never know if I did my job teaching you, and you'll never know if you actually know what the heck to do with that information. We all hate tests. I think most of us, even if we're good at that part, we don't get nervous. We don't like being tested, but it is part of a refining process. It is part of a position where we start to learn, have I learned from the teacher, and am I able to put that into practice? And so I hate hearing how you get tested, but what I love about that verse is, how does he respond? Here I am. Think about Adam and Eve in the garden when he was calling out for them. What did they do? They hid. They knew his voice. Uh-oh. What did Abraham do? Here I am. He was ready. He was willing. And then, he responds with, here I am. And then he doesn't ignore, he doesn't hide. God calls, and this is really important to understand, Abraham knows God's voice. How often do we men respond to the wrong voice, maybe? We listen to a friend, maybe dealt with something in life. You know, I did, oh, here's what I would do, right? Oh, you're dealing with this? Try this. He knew God's voice enough that as soon as he heard it, here I am, I'm ready. He immediately responds. I don't think I know the Lord's voice that intimately all the time. Fathers, we must know the Master's voice, and when we know this and we're being called, then we'll be able to do something. Otherwise, we're going to miss opportunities to be obedient to the Father. When I was writing down some things to talk about, I thought, what do you mean miss opportunities to be obedient? I like not being obedient. I like being off the leash. I like roaming a little bit. Right? If I'm on a diet, what do we like the most? Do we like the diet or do we like cheat days? Clearly, I like cheat days. Thank you. You didn't have to say it. I heard you. We don't like being obedient, but when we are not, we miss opportunities to be blessed. In our obedience, it will bring blessings to your life, and the life of those around you. Dads, fathers, father-like figures, be obedient. And trust me, you will see your family blessed. You will see those people blessed that you're trying to spill life into. I guarantee it. Father, you being obedient as a father allows the Father to bless you and your family in mighty ways. So, next we see the Lord give Abraham the beginning of this test. And my, what a test it is. He says, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on the mountain that I will show you. What? Guys, if your brain can wrap around that, we'll talk, because I'd like that to be explained to me. I have a feeling that when I know the Lord's voice and he gives me a plan like that, there's going to be a lot of, nope, uh-uh, misheard you, you probably said something wrong, yeah, you might need to go talk to somebody, God. Maybe you're talking to the wrong dude. It ain't me. We're going to argue back and forth for a long time. I have a feeling a lot of us in here, if we're honest with ourselves, would do that. How many of you are willing to, well, maybe after a Saturday night when your son got on your nerves, you might be willing to. But in general, how often would you immediately respond to that with, I'm in. Got it. I'm on my way. What does Abraham do? Early the next morning, he sets out. There is zero hesitation. Zero. He gets up the next morning and he goes, I'm on my path. This is what I'm supposed to do. I heard God clearly. I'm in. People looking at him are probably like, what the heck's he doing, right? Remember, Noah building the ark? What the heck's he doing? I heard, I do. He speaks, I listen, I do. It's very simple. Difficult when put into practice in some instances, sure. But think about if we were to do that, gentlemen. I hear him speak. That's definitely his voice. I know it. I set out and I do it. And I allow the consequences to fall where they may because I know it's God's plan. Let's see. So I'm going to go through the rest of the story very quickly with you. Sorry. Early the next morning, Abraham got up, loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up, saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you. Did you catch that? It's a very small word. Two letters. I teach history, but I understand that number. We will worship, and then we will come back to you. Abraham was told to sacrifice Isaac. That's the plan. He's doing it. I got the wood. I got the knife. I got the fire. We're ready to build the altar. But I don't think he's lying. I've heard people say, why would Abraham lie? He knew he wasn't coming back. Abraham knows his Lord's voice so intimately that he knows that God does what? Provides. He provides. He knows. I don't know how he knows this. I don't know how he knows that he's coming back with his son, but he knows he's coming back with his son. He knows my God, my Savior, my Lord, my provider is not going to really follow through with that. Like there's something. I don't know what it is, but I'm willing to go through with this, God. We're going over, but we're coming back. What that's going to look like, I'm not sure. So let's keep rolling. I lost my spot. Wood, placed it on his, oh, there it is. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering, placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up, said to his father, Abraham, father, yes, my son. Abraham replied, the fire, the wood, they're all here, Isaac said, but where is the lamb for this offering? Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for this burnt offering, son. And the two of them went on together. No questions. I love that. When they reached the place God had told them about, Abraham built an altar there, arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar. Again, it's getting dicey. Sometimes when you're in the moment, when God has a plan in your life, it gets dicey. You're at that finish line of what you're supposed to do. Quit your job. What, God? I have three mouths to feed. You sure? I'm walking into my principal's office right now to quit. You got something else? Quit your job. Oh, okay. And then what happens? You get a phone call right before you walk into the principal's office and we have a job offer for you. Ooh, okay. It worked out, I guess. Because it always does. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Can't imagine where he's at this point. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Here I am, he replied. Amazing. He does it again. He doesn't hesitate. Don't lay a hand on the boy. Don't do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld your son from me. Your only son. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket, he saw a ram caught by thorns, or by his horns. He went over and took the ram, sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. The angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time, and he said, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you've done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of the enemies, and through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because of you. So Abraham is ready to follow through. The Lord stops him. He gives a ram in his place. And then he says, because you have not withheld your one and only son, what is he willing to do? What's he going to bless? Remember, I told you, obedience brings blessing. Through your offspring, all nations of the earth will be blessed because you obeyed me. And how blessed are we, people, because of this father's obedience? You know, Abraham's, one of his offspring was Jesus down the line. Because on that mountaintop, he was willing to follow through with what the plan was. He was obedient. One of his offspring in the future was Jesus, who has blessed all nations with the gift of salvation. Wow. Wow. Be obedient. They're obedient. We get blessed, but more the world over might be blessed. Amen. And check this out. Fathers, father figures, when you obey, your children see it, and in turn, they will obey. The next characteristic is being steadfast. That's a weird word. I'm going to get into it a little bit, but it dawned in my brain. I don't use it often. I don't think we all use it too often. The next father I'd like to talk about is one that we don't normally focus on. We normally focus on the son in this story. And you probably know where I'm going with this. Again, I love the word cliche. So probably always talk about on Father's Day. The prodigal son. Who do we focus on in that story? The title tells us. Prodigal son. We usually always focus on the prodigal son, right? We know what he did, but I want to dig a little deeper into, very quickly, the father. The son, at one point, says to the father, give me my inheritance so I can go on, right? Now, what that means is, if you've never heard this before, is, give me my inheritance. Dad, I want you dead because your money is of more value to me than you as my father. I don't know how I'd handle that if my son said that to me, if any of my boys said that to me. One, they'd be really dumb. I'm a teacher. You get 79 cents and some lint from my pocket. You wouldn't get much living out of that. But think about that. That's said to the father. The son says, I'd rather you be dead because then I get to live. Your money is more important. Father's job is to remain steadfast. That's going to be very difficult, especially in a type of situation like this. Our feelings will come into play, won't they? You think the father felt good about that? You think he was like, yippee, can't wait. But what does he do? He gives him his inheritance. He says, okay, son, here's your inheritance. What does the son do? He goes off. We all know he lives a crazy life. You see, the son decided that he wanted to cease being a son. The father never, ever decides to cease being a father. The father remains a father, even though the son says, you're dead to me. I don't want to be with you anymore. Think about that. I don't know that if one of my kids said that to me that I'd be that accepting. My father over the past, for a long time, has dealt with some very serious situations in our family where if I was in his shoes, I've told him, you might want to just stop worrying about being a father right now. And he's looked at me like I'm crazy. Again, I'm not in his shoes, and I pray to God I never am. But he has made the decision, my father, and I love him for this because it has taught me a lot, that he will remain a father, even though his child might not want him to. It's very difficult. The father makes this decision, I'm never going to cease being a father. I looked up some synonyms for steadfast: dedicated, faithful, relentless, single-minded, unwavering, dependable, fixed, never failing, persevering, reliable, wholehearted. Come on. Guys, would you like those things said about you? Think about those. I mean, come on. You see, the son decides to come back eventually, right? The son wants to come back and he wants to be a servant. He says, my father's servants eat better than me, right? What am I doing? He doesn't need the dad, though. Think about this. He isn't off doing something else. Nobody needs to come and tell the father at some point, I think we see your son coming. We found out he's coming home. The dad is what? Watching, waiting, praying, hoping that someday his son will return. He doesn't need to be told. Think about when the son comes back. He's probably gross looking, right? He's meeting slop with pigs. But the dad, again, immediately, and it says what in the word? Far off, sees him. I don't know about you, my eyes are awful. But he sees this man, if that even looks like a man at this point, scraggly hair, you know, he probably is dressed all nasty, and he says, that's my boy. Does he wait for him to come? No, he jumps off the porch and runs towards him. This father has been waiting to grab his son again in his arms. He remained engaged. He remained single-minded. He remained fixed. He remained faithful to his calling of being a father. His son tried to mumble something to him. Dad, please let me. Probably didn't even call him dad. The father cuts him off. Remember, the son wanted to come back and define himself as a servant. The father reminds the boy of his title. His title is son. And he is a son because of the father's commitment to him. He defines his son as a son. It's not the son defining himself as a son. The son already gave that title up. I don't want it. The father defines his boy as his son. God in heaven defines us because he remains, not because we do. Because he is steadfast, not because we are. He looks at you and he says, you are my son, you are my daughter. You're a co-heir with Christ. He defines us, right? We don't. Because he remains steadfast. Nothing you can do will cause God the Father to say to you that you're anything less than his son or daughter. He loves you. He will always remain that to you. I remember when we were growing, when me and Lynn first got married, and we were talking about children and what this would look like. She probably forgets this because she always thinks the best of me, God bless her. I told her, at a time that I'm an incredibly selfish person. And being married and having kids has shown that even more to me. Right? Sacrificial. I want to talk about being sacrificial. This is the last one. I told her I'm very selfish. I know that in me. And nothing has shown me that more than being married and having kids. Almost on a daily basis, I have to put others' needs before mine, and that's what matters, of being a father, being a husband. And even today, she said, what do you want to do on Father's Day? My mom wants to take us out to lunch or do something. And I said, hon, everything in me wants to lay on my couch and slip in and out of consciousness while I watch the final round of the U.S. Open. That's all I want to do. That's it. Give me a break, right? But again, do I love my family? Of course. But that is my selfish nature taking over. I don't want to do nothing. I want to serve me. Give me a break, right? But I know I know that my place is to be with my family because the Lord has blessed me with that. I know that I must continue to sacrifice. The greatest example of this is John 3:16, right? Ken talked on it last week. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. God the Father was so sacrificial because of his love for us. And then his Son Jesus followed suit from that example and laid his own life down being sacrificial, that we now have the opportunity to be saved. And you can wrap that back up to all of Abraham's obedience and all of these other things that follow through up to this. So think about this. Jesus being humble, came down from the throne of heaven to a baby's manger. Being obedient, lived his life all the way to the cross. Staying steadfast, right? The Father stayed steadfast, remained steadfast. Then he remained steadfast his entire life, knowing what he was going towards. Right? Even the night before. If the cup can pass, let it, but not my will, what? Your will. I mean, come on. And then the ultimate sacrifice, God gives up his Son, and Jesus gives up his life. Those are these tools, gentlemen, that if we put them into our lives, I'm willing to believe, and I've seen it happen, that this world can change. People will see Christ in us, our children will see Christ in us, and then the world can change because of it. And allow me to end with this. I know it's hard. I'm not stupid. It is hard to put these things into our life. It would be much easier every day for me, like I said, to lay on my couch and slip in and out of consciousness and watch some golf or some basketball. But when we choose to do these things, it gets difficult. Hear me. Satan will come after you with guns blazing. If you're a man that says, with conviction, I will put on these characteristics. I will follow Christ. I will serve the Lord. I will cause my family, as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. Satan will come after you with guns blazing, wanting to take you down, because nothing bothers him more, in my opinion, and I think I'm right. Again, let's have coffee and let's talk. I think I'm right. Nothing bothers him more than a man that is convicted to follow God. Because then communities will be changed. Families will be changed, and the world will be changed because of it. Nothing. I firmly believe it. In my soul, I believe that he will come after you. Can we please bring up that picture? I want to tell you a story, and this is the end. I was talking to a friend of mine about a month ago, and about a month before that, I was listening to a pastor speak. And so I don't take ownership of this story. I forget the gentleman's name. It eludes me at this point, but you can probably find it if you type in YouTube the title of this picture. But about a month ago, a friend of mine was telling me, we were talking about this, and he said that he's dealing with so much garbage, and he feels like every decision he's made is wrong, even though he knows he was doing what God told him to do. He's filled with anxiety, even though he knows he was told, this is what God said, this is what I'm doing, and everything I feel like is wrong, and the world is collapsing around me. I'm backed into a corner. And I had listen to this pastor talk about this picture. You may have seen this picture before, I don't know. But there's this story that goes, the title of this picture is called, and I don't want to get it wrong, because of course when I speak, that's what's going to happen. The title of the picture is called Checkmate. Checkmate, right? And it's the devil and man playing a game of chess. And the devil, it's a little blurry, but the devil's got a smirk. He's smiling. He's happy. He's won. The man's backed into a corner. You made all your good moves, brother. But I got you. I can't wait. And what's the man doing? Oh, my God. I've done everything. Oh, like, what? I'm dead. You got me. Right? And I said, and I brought this up to my friend, this story. This picture hangs in the Louvre. And this group of star athletes was visiting the Louvre. Right? All these world champions. And one of them happened to be a chess player. And as they were going on the tour, they all, you know, stop and they're all walking and they're looking at all the pictures. And then the tour moves along and the chess player stands. He remains there looking at it. 20 minutes or so goes by and the tour guide realizes we're missing one. We're one short. So he goes back. The gentleman is still standing there examining the picture. And the tour guide says, we have to move along. And he says, is everything okay? He said, well, I'm a world champion chess player. And I've been examining this picture. He said, oh, okay, well, what's up? And he said, well, I've been looking at the guy, I've been looking at Satan. But then I started to study the board. And he said, I'm a world champion chess player. I look at this game differently than anyone else. And he said, so you're going to have to do one of two things. You're either going to have to change the title of this picture, or you're going to have to change the painting. Well, this is a masterpiece. The guy says, what are you talking about? Why? And he said, again, I'm a world champion chess player. When you look at that board and you understand how it's working, check this out. The king has one more move. The king has one more move. And I told my friend this. When you're backed into a corner, when you've honored what God has told you to do, when you're humble, when you're obedient, when you remain in what you're called to do as a father, as a leader, and when you sacrifice, even when it feels like Satan got you, the king has one more move. He always does. Guys, in your marriage, the king has one more move. In your finances, the king has one more move. In your relationships, the king has one more move. If you feel like your son or your daughter is running from you, the king has one more move. Always, always the winner. Always the winner. The king always, in his fullness of time, has one more move. I'm going to close very quickly with this. Fathers, if you do not know the Father in heaven, I want to give you the opportunity today to do that. In order to know his voice, you need to have a relationship with him. And I encourage you this day to run to him today. Allow him to, he's already running after you. He's been doing it your whole life. Turn around from what you're doing. Start walking back towards him. Acknowledge that he is the greatest father and he has all the tools at his disposal. He always will have one more move in your life. But you pray today for you that you will make that opportunity known in your own heart, that you will acknowledge him, Jesus, as Lord and Savior in your life, that you will accept him into your heart, knowing that he has forgiven all your sins because he died on a cross, not because you did anything. You get to sit in the Father's arms as he sings songs over you. Because throw off your burdens today into his arms. You can be amazing because of him, not because of you. Father, thank you for today. Thank you that you love us. Father, thank you that you are a father. Thank you that you are the greatest example of a father. Thank you that you are sacrificial with your son. And Jesus, thank you that you loved us enough to give your life up for us. And I pray today for fathers, Lord. I pray that you would bless them. I pray that those that don't know you would turn, accept you into their hearts as their Lord and Savior, Lord. And I pray for this world that as fathers decide to be fathers and father figures in this world to the fatherless, that you bless this world and that we would see mighty, mighty happy Father's Day. I hope that you guys have something great.